I'm going to pose this as the topic for the day. What are some of the real perils that lie ahead that we should watch for? The perils we should watch for, the things that lie ahead. Well, we have a number of passages about the last days, the last times in which we're living, and this one might seem rather elementary, but you know, the statement wouldn't be made if it was not a danger. Because it was believed and taught that everybody who was a false minister was in one of these worldly churches. It couldn't happen in the Church of God. And yet that's the very place where it did happen. And people didn't expect it. And they were just bamboozled by it and taken in. But you read here in Mark 13, and the first thing I want to talk about is false Christs and false prophets. It happened. Thousands of people went right along with it because they couldn't believe that since this was the Church of God and the Church of God was changing doctrine, it couldn't be wrong. They didn't check the Bibles to see what the Bible said. They just listened to what they were told. So let's notice here what we read in Mark 13, verse number 6. Mark 13, verse number 6. Jesus said, "Many will come in my name, saying, I am he, and will deceive many." And as he said in the previous verse, "Take heed that no one deceives you." So they're going to profess Christ all right. They're going to say he was Christ all right. If the Christ was the Christ. But they deceive people. And then notice this warning here in Luke 21, verse number 8. This is what they failed to really get. And here's what you read. He said, "Take heed that you be not deceived. For many will come in my name, saying, I am he," and then they'll say, quote, "the time has drawn near," unquote. "Therefore, do not go after them." So he's talking about the end times. He's talking about people who had an understanding and knowledge of the times of the end, and he's warned Christians not to be deceived by them. Well, indeed, they were deceived by the thousands. So one of the first perils that affected the church, and could even affect many today, is false preachers and false Christs. That is, people who come in the name of Christ falsely. That's the first thing. Now, we hear a great deal about the Antichrist, don't we? That's the second one, the Antichrist. Now, the Antichrist is only mentioned four times in the Bible, and it's only mentioned by John. And that's in the epistles of John. So let's go over to 1 John 2. In verse number 18. And here he defines the Antichrist. Now this has been applied in all kinds of ways that technically doesn't fit the description, except maybe in a broad sense. But we read here in 1 John 2, verse number 18, "Little children, it is the last hour." Now John really equated the last times from the time of Christ on down to the final culmination of the age. And he says here, "It is the last hour, and as you have heard that Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come." And there's a marginal rendering. Some of the translations omit that Antichrist is coming, but it's probably there. I didn't check the received text, but "even now many Antichrists have come, by which we know that it is the last hour." Now here they were associated in the church, and what does it say about them? "They went out from us, but they were not of us. And if they would have been of us, they would have continued with us." So he's warning that within the church would be these many antichrists who are actually in the church, and then he defines them a little bit further here as we skip down to verse number 22. "Who is a liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ?" He is Antichrist who denies the Father and the Son. Now that can occur in more than one way. You remember what Paul wrote in 1 Timothy. He said they profess that they know God, but in works they deny him. So they're denying him in works. That's Timothy, I think. I'd have to look it up. Anyway, in 1 John 4, verse 3, we read this statement here. Let's pick it up in verse 2. "Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come," which is actually the perfect participle in the Greek, and that would be proper, "has come in the flesh is of God." And a number of other translations show that clearly. "And every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God." Now, the problem is a lot of people have never understood that this whole book is a polemic, that is an attack against the Gnostics. Gnosticism was coming on the scene at that time, and the Gnostics had one favorite doctrine called Docetism. And that doctrine taught that Jesus Christ did not really come in the flesh. He was only some kind of a manifestation, and he wasn't a human being, and he really didn't die on the cross, or the stake, whichever you prefer to say. So the fact is, this is a polemic against these Gnostics. And we have a similar thing developing on the world scene today, don't we? You know, like the Da Vinci Code and the Jesus Papers. I gave a lot of that information earlier. So here's what he says now. Every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. They were denying that. And there were some major heresiarchs that were coming on the scene at the time. Cerinthus was one of them. He was probably one of the main ones that was advocating that Jesus was an apparition and not really real. This is the spirit of Antichrist, which you have heard was coming and is now already in the world. So that whole thing prevailed, and it certainly has got all the markings of a reappearance. And in 2 John chapter 7, we read here, many deceivers have gone out into the world who do not confess Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. And this is present participle. For example, a number of the other translations, I think, make it as accurate as it can be made, translated as coming or has come or the coming of. In other words, they don't confess that when Jesus Christ came, he came in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. And then finally, this does not refer directly to the antichrist, but this nevertheless is describing what was taking place when Jude wrote this. It's a correlation and a continuation of what John wrote. And here's what Jude said in Jude verse 4. Certain men have crept in unnoticed who years ago were marked out for this condemnation, ungodly men who turned the grace of God into lewdness and denying the only Lord God and our Lord Jesus Christ. So again, they denied him by their works. But the primary idea that John was equating was that this concept of docetism, that Jesus Christ did not really come and pay the penalty for man's sins in the flesh, that was a Gnostic concept and belief, and it still floats around today. So the Antichrist is certainly another one of these things to be aware of. Now the next is the synagogue of Satan. Now as we pointed out in the article that we wrote on the subject, the original concept in the church on this teaching was that this represented church errors. That may well be. But on the other hand, it certainly would be safe to say it is representative of an attitude or a spirit or a particular frame of mind that is found in all the churches, and therefore we're all being warned of what is taking place in all of these seven churches. Those are the things we should avoid. And here's what it says in Revelation 2 and verse number 9. I know your works, he says to the church of Ephesus, and your tribulation, poverty, but are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Now that can be understood in two ways. That can be understood, of course, as a literal Jewish persecution, or more than likely, since we're dealing in a spiritual era, it refers to people who may regard themselves as spiritual Jews and they are not. Now, who are spiritual Jews? Paul tells us in Romans 2, verses 28 and 29. Here's what he says. Verse 28, he is not a Jew who is one outwardly. So this physical aspect in a relationship with God is not of any real value as far as salvation is concerned. He is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit and not in the letter, whose praise is not for men but of God. So what he's saying is that a spiritual Jew is someone who has truly been circumcised spiritually and has surrendered to God and has a right spirit with God. That is certainly applicable in this case of this synagogue of Satan. So what this really means is that every single person who regards himself a Christian should be looking at himself quite clearly in the spiritual mirror to see where he stands before God, because it's not a matter of being in a physical organization. It's not a matter of professing. It's a matter of whether there's really been a change in your heart. That's what counts. Nothing else really matters in the end. In Revelation chapter 3 and verse number 9, "Indeed, I'll make those of the synagogues of Satan who say they are Jews and are not, but lie. Indeed, I'll make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I've loved you." So again, you see that the warning here is that there are going to be people making this claim that on a spiritual level, I don't think we could really apply these to physical Jews in this sense, because I don't know of any Jews in the church. I know of some few that were back in worldwide at the time they were there, but of course their line of thinking was that we were all Gentiles, which of course is not true at all. It's amazing. There are some Jewish rabbis that understand this, and they've made this very plain. They recognize the fact that the Jews are only one tribe of the 12 tribes of Israel, and that the lost 10 tribes vanished at the time of the Assyrian captivity. And they migrated, and they got the location pretty well accurate, too. They locate them in northwestern Europe and all the English-speaking world. That is, the people who are of Anglo-Saxon stock and Nordic and all this stock. They're the literal descendants of the 10 tribes. And if they're not, then God never fulfilled his promises that he made to them. Now, they have people who like to regard themselves as spiritual Jews, but he said they're really not. They're lying. So that's a warning. That's a peril to watch for. We're talking about the perils to be on guard for and to watch. Now, what's the next one? The man of sin. The man of sin. I've heard people name this one and name that one and think he's it and this person is it. Nobody really knows. Not yet. Here's what Paul said. 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. "Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him." So what's he talking about? The return of Christ. So he's talking once again of the time of the end. So what happens just before the time of the end? "We ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come." Or as the marginal rendering says, "is at hand. Let no one deceive you." So what he's saying here is people can be deceived on this issue. "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless there be an apostasy first." And that Greek word is apostasy. And the man of sin is revealed. Now, I think we could conclude, if we have any understanding at all, if what happened in the church in the 70s was not a fulfillment of this text, then we're going to have to look forward to some time in ahead when there will be another large church that'll have all the truth that worldwide had, and then it too will fall away. It's either one or the other. See, how much time do we have? So that's for God to decide. But they certainly had the truth, and then they turned their backs on it. If you want to see what has happened to that worldwide Church of God now, you ought to check their website. It'll make you sick. They're just another one of these Protestant-y type of churches that's joined the hodgepodge of all these others, and there's no difference. And as I told my wife here a while back, if I were somebody looking for a church, give me one good reason why I should go down and join them. I can find the same thing around the corner in any one of the local Protestant churches. What's the difference? And this is what happened to him. So he said, but in addition to that, the man of sin is to be revealed. Now, who's this man of sin? Well, this man was chosen. I heard accusations made about this one. And some thought this one was it. No, because here's what it says about him. "Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is God, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." Now, what's the meaning of that, the temple of God? What does that mean? Now, you will find in the New Testament that that word is used in reference to the church. It's not limited to that by any means. It means a literal temple, too. But it has long been thought by many parties that the end is going to really be closing in when the Jews build a temple down in Jerusalem, and the idea is that they're going to build it on that big stone mass there where they go to the Wailing Wall. Where was the temple? The temple had to be built where there was water. There's no water up on that mount. What it has is a series of systems. Now, the sacrificial system required all this running water. Where did they get this water? Why, they got it from the spring of Gihon. And where was the spring of Gihon? About 300 yards or so south of that big edifice. And I'll guarantee you this, if the Jews ever think they're going to go up to that temple site and take it over and build a temple there, you're going to see a war break out like you never believed, because to the Muslims, that entire temple mount up there is regarded as a mosque. No Gentiles allowed to go into a mosque. And where that Mosque of Omar is, that was built in about the 7th, 8th centuries A.D. So, you know, people think they're going to build a temple up on that mount. I would be very, very surprised if that happened. But the spring of Gihon, what happened to it, it was what they call a type of an artesian well, and would flow. It was almost like Old Faithful, although the water wasn't hot. Old Faithful blows about every hour, not just on the second, but within a few minutes range of an hour. And I don't know if you saw that ad on TV here where this guy was selling a purgative that helps people with their problems. And this ranger would sneak out there when people were not watching. He'd pour it in there so it'd be sure to be work. So the Old Faithful to work. And that's how they're advertising this particular laxative. They were anyway, it was a type of a spring that would come up about every hour, whatever length of time, would just gush out this water every so often. And the sacrificial system required vast amounts of water. So it shows you very plainly that this whole thing about a temple is a big question yet. Now it remains to be seen what is really meant by it. But what is interesting here, he's going to sit in the temple of God as though he is God, showing himself that he is God. I don't know if anybody's done that. I know some who have been a man of sin, but I certainly don't know the man of sin. There's a big difference. So that's something to watch for. And then as he says here in verse number 8, when this lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So this man is going to be here at the very time Christ returns. The coming, and here's a thing that's going to mark him. I haven't seen anybody do this by any means. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who are perishing because they did not receive the love of the truth. So when you see some kind of a physical temple built, if you see some man sit in it and he starts performing miracles, that would be a dead giveaway, wouldn't it? But what does it really mean here entirely? See, that's what we need to watch for and to pray for wisdom, to understand if and when it happens in that way. And just remember what Jesus warned over here in Matthew 24. Here's what he said in Matthew 24, verse number 24. False Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. The elect can be deceived, it says here. Now, I can just imagine what would have happened back in worldwide in the 70s when all these doctrinal changes were taking place, and then one of the profoundly spiritual leaders would suddenly start performing miracles. What do you think would have happened? Well, probably everyone would have been carried away with that. All right, that's another aspect to watch for. Now, there's something else here. Let's go to the book of Daniel, and we'll read here about a fierce, enigmatic king of some type is coming up on the scene. And here's what we read in Daniel 8. And we can pick up the time setting here, beginning here in about... Daniel was given this vision, and then he was told specifically in verse 17, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. So now we're talking about the end time. And what does he say here? I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation, for at the appointed time of the end shall be. I'm telling you what's going to happen, he says. And then he says, notice verse 23, in the latter time of their kingdom. Now, historically, what happened is that the Roman Empire was the one who assumed the responsibility of the king of the north and became the king of the north. and they ruled that whole land for many hundreds of years. It wasn't until the 10th Roman Legion left the Holy Land after 300 B.C. that the Arabs began to move in. And then they began to call it their right to live there. They didn't have any right to live there at all because it was given to Israel and taken away by God. And then the Romans ruled it for a number of years. But as it says here in verse number 23, this is the time of the end. And what does it say about him? When the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise having fierce features or a fierce countenance, who understands sinister schemes. Oh, I can remember, you know, when I've read about Napoleon was picked as that man. I read that Nero was picked as that man. And I read that Franz Joseph Strauss was picked as that man. You know, and the list goes on and on. In fact, one of the latest ones, this was going to be fulfilled by Saddam Hussein. They picked their man, you know. Oh, I tell you, when that happens, the wise will understand. His power shall be mighty. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive and destroy the mighty and also the holy people. So this is what is going to be directed. And what do you read here? He shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the princes of princes, but he shall be broken. And then notice, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. So this is another thing to keep your eyes on. Watch for this any kind of event. I don't to the degree it'll involve the United States directly, but we should certainly keep our eyes on Europe. Now here's another one, the King of the North. Here's what we read about the King of the North, and notice the time setting once again here. In verse 10, Daniel is told, I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision refers to many days yet to come. And then you read about this longest prophecy in the Bible. It's the longest prophecy in the Bible because it involves the longest period of time, and it goes right up to the very end. And then you read here in verse number 35, some of those of understanding shall fall to refine them, purify, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. And then we have here, all indications are the King of the North, because what do we read here in verse number 40? At the time of the end, the King of the South shall attack him, and the King of the North shall come against him. And verse 41, he shall enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. So this is going to involve Palestine and what takes place down there. Now anybody that's got the idea that's the place where they want to go to now because that's where they're going to be safe has got to have rocks in their head. I mean, you're not safe in that area of the world, especially if you're an American. And they hate Christians and they hate Jews. And they certainly hate Americans. If that time comes, you better hope and pray you've been counted worthy to escape all these things. All right, that's the King of the North. Now we have another one coming right up more to our time period, and say more in detail, and that's the beast and the false prophet. Now here's what we read in Revelation chapter 13, verses 11 and 15. Revelation 13 and verse number 11. You see, the first beast is described here beginning in the first number of verses till you come up to verse 11. And then you read in verse 11, I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. Which indication is referring to the Catholic Church. Anyway, here's what I want to emphasize. He performs great signs, so that he even makes fire to come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and he deceives those who dwell on the earth by the signs which he's granted to do in the sight of men, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who is wounded by the sword and live. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Now, a lot of people have interpreted that as referring to the Catholic Church in the medieval period, and even many, many Protestant commentators are absolutely convinced it is. All I know is what's coming on the scene is going to be an anti-God religion, or an anti-God philosophy, that's going to hate Christianity. And if we have any understanding what's going on today, look what's happening in this country. Look what's happening in Europe. Look what's happening all over the whole world with respect to what is happening to Christians. So we need to keep our eyes open. You may be limiting it if you just say it refers to the Catholic Church. It may be much broader than that. And that's what we need to be aware of. And this is the second beast, the beast of Revelation. And then we'll go to Revelation 19, verse 20. Revelation 19 and verse 20. The beast was captured, and with him the false prophet, who worked signs in his presence. So someone is going to be on the scene who will have miraculous powers. And what does it say? By which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. So this refers to the time Christ returns. And then in Revelation 20, verse number 10, what do we read? That the devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet. And the Greek doesn't have a word there. It's interpreted and understood where the beast and the false prophet. Now, are, the only reason they put are here in italics is because they're a belief of an immortal soul. And you go down to hell and then you roast like a pig on a stick for all eternity. No, the actual meaning, if you want to interpret it properly, knowing, understanding that when people die, they die, and that's the end of them, it should be, were cast, where the beast and the false prophet were cast. That's a proper inference. And then the devil, he's going to be the one that's tormented day and night forever and ever. Men burn. They don't remain in some state of purgatory or some condition like that. That's a pagan concept that crept into the church beginning reasonably early after the first century. Now, let's look at the mark of the beast. That's another thing to be aware of. Mark of the beast. What do we read here in Revelation 13, verse number 16? He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark. So here we see a mark being spoken of. And then we go to Revelation 14, verse 9, and we read here, the third angel followed them with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on their forehead or in their hand, he himself shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God. So this is something that is very, very abhorrent to God. In Revelation 15:2, here's the angels having the seven last plagues. And I saw something like a sea of glass mingled with fire, and those who had the victory over the beast, over his image, and over his mark. So they're ones that gain victory over this mark, whatever it is. And then in Revelation 16, verse 2, so the first went and poured out his bowl upon the earth, and a foul and loathsome sore came upon the men who had the mark of the beast and who worshipped his image. And in Revelation 20, verse number 4, we read, I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment given to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, who had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received his mark on their foreheads or in their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. This is going to be a very, very real thing that's taking place at the time Christ returns. How many of us may be involved in it and caught up in it? It just depends on how soon it happens. I cannot say. And neither can anybody else, although there are plenty of them who are willing to lay out dates. Now that's the mark of the beast. Now, we have also, as we're back here in Revelation 13, verse 18, it mentions the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man. His number is 666. And then in Revelation 15 and verse 2, once again we read here, they gained victory over the image and over his mark and over the number of his name. Now, here's some interesting things. We observed Pentecost on June the 5th, Monday, didn't we? The next day was June the 6th. 666, wasn't it? A big deal was made out of that. What's interesting, of course, about June 6th also was D-Day in 1944 when the Allies invaded Europe. Largest invasion that ever occurred in the history of the world. Thousands and thousands of ships and men involved. Anyway, this month of June the 6th became a fascination to many people. Satanists from around the world gathered in Hollywood for a mass to mark June 6, 2006, or 666, to mock fears over the date known by dark believers as the number of the beast. The sold-out evening mass commemorates the anniversary of the organizing group, the Church of Satan, founded by Anton LaVey in 1966, who was dubbed the Black Pope. Now, he's now deceased, of course, but I was very much aware of him even at that time. The mass, an original three-act drama ritual, will be celebrated in a theater with telephone prefix 666 by Brian Moore and Heather Saints, suburbanite satanic priests and parents. But Satanists say they actually have no regard for the number. For Satanists, numbers are just numbers, and June 6206 is a day like any other. And then the year 666 date has prompted some U.S. schools to beef up security after murky rumors of possible threats emerged, while Hollywood has jumped on the date as the perfect marketing tool. Tuesday marks the launch of a remake of the 1976 horror film The Omen, a movie event preceded by a month-long advertising campaign built around the ominous 666 as the launch date. So whenever a buck can be made, Hollywood will be right in the thick of it. Now, around the country, this is New York, some superstitious mothers-to-be took steps Tuesday to make sure their babies were not born on the most bedeviling date, 666. People are canceling left and right, said Lisa Washington, speaking for the Children's Hospital of New York Presbyterian Medical Center. More than a dozen deliveries were postponed because of the 666, which is said to be the number of the beast. It is, isn't it? But I tell you, how you find that number and who you're going to point it out to, I wouldn't have a clue, and neither would anybody else, but I've read all kinds of people who knew it. A Chicago obstetrician performed a C-section on a woman who didn't want her son to be teased about his birthday. But Rebecca Zirkin scheduled her birth to be on that day with a C-section on purpose. I did it because June 5th is my birthday, and I wanted each of us to have our own separate birthday date. Now, I mentioned here the schools closed down because of the threat of violence on 666. Well, here's right from our local newspaper right here. This was in North Eugene High. School will resume today at North Eugene High, and this is dated June the 7th, after a rumor of a planned shooting prompted school officials to cancel classes Tuesday. An anonymous tipster told police the school officials that the plot was related to the date 666, and many consider the number 666 to be associated with the devil. Eugene police found no credible evidence of any planned act of violence. And by noon, officers had determined that the rumor to be a casual conversation about the date between North Eugene student and a student at nearby Kelly Middle School. And these two had a what-if conversation, what would happen on 666. But investigators and school officials emphasized that the girl who did the right thing, who reported the rumor, and encouraged anyone else who had information about future planned violence to share it immediately with authorities. So that happened right here locally in Eugene. Now, here's a number of thoughts that have been written up regarding 666, and these are from various theologians of one type or another. Some of them have a pretty good sound analysis, and others, the big thing you're going to hear more than anything else on this whole thing of a mark of the beast is what? a little thing implanted in your head and on your arm, on your wrist. That's been around for a long time. Here's what Dwight Pentecost in Prophecy for Today writes. I confess that I don't know what this number means. I am certain, however, that there are more than 666 interpretations. Which would be pretty true, wouldn't it? Everyone seems to have an opinion, and since God doesn't explain the meaning, apparently it's not important for us to know. Before this person comes to prominence, believers will have been translated into God's presence. Here we go with the rapture. You'd be amazed how many of them think the rapture is going to take you all away, and then you won't have to worry about it. We will not have the slightest interest in the beast or the false prophet because we'll be occupied with the Lord Jesus in glory. Here's another one, Jack Van Imp. You've probably heard of him. He says, it is likely that the image of the beast, a forthcoming master computer, that's the image of the beast, will give Antichrist all the information necessary for him to govern the world. Its memory bank will know the number, record, and history of every living person. All I can say is I better hope and pray somebody doesn't get into it, a computer whiz gets into it, and what's the word they cause when they hack it? Yeah, somebody doesn't get in there and hack it. Anyway, it says here, this number would be composed of an international, national area computer code plus an individual number such as one social security number. The present international computer code is 6. It could easily be expanded to 666. Ooh-hoo! That's something to be aware of, isn't it? Here's another one, Richard Albane's End Time Visions. Nothing in the Bible, either linguistically or grammatically, indicates that the mark of the beast is a literal mark on the skin. See, everybody has an opinion, don't they? And Mr. DeHaan, Studies in Revelation. What this mark of the beast will be, we may not know now. Hundreds of answers have been suggested, but I do not believe these are scriptural. Men have tried to identify this Antichrist, and there have been hundreds of guesses concerning his identity, but all of them have been wrong. It's foolish, therefore, to speculate concerning his identity, and the truth is the same with the mark of the beast. I'd agree with that. In fact, one of the early church fathers, I have this in the Gnostic Connection, and I didn't take the time to look it up, but I forget which one it was. In about the 2nd century, he said it's just foolish to try to figure out the 666. He said, no, wait until the time is revealed. He said that in 200 A.D. And people are still trying to figure it out, aren't they? What the mark is, we do not know. There are many who believe that the mark will consist of the number tattooed on the foreheads and on the hands of the followers of the beast. And this is Salem Kerbin, Satan's mark exposed, so he's exposing what it is now. One day, the tribulation period, you'll need proper identification to withdraw or deposit money in your bank. The identification mark will be an invisible mark either on the back of your hand or on your forehead. The Social Security number will become your identification number. It will be prefixed by 666 and possibly followed by your own personal zip code. Now, there are people right now who believe that the Social Security card is a mark of the beast, and I mean they will not allow themselves to be enrolled in Social Security or even take a job where the Social Security number has to be named. Well-meaning, but misled. The government knows you by number. Your most universal number is now your Social Security number. Quite conceivably, it could be the mark. Technology is already here, whereby the Social Security number could be painlessly imprinted on your forehead or right hand in invisible ink and revealed only by a special light. See how many people believe this is what it's going to be? The mark will be harmless and invisible, and a laser beam applied to the mark. You'll have the choice of having the mark placed in your right hand or on your forehead. What this identifying will be, the Lord does not desire to make clear at this time. And then here's the last one. This is from Betty Lynn, Pathways to Armageddon. The prince will exclude everyone who does not have the approved cashless account. Because of the importance of that account to daily existence and to protect it from theft, account information will be bio-implanted, leaving a small mark on the hand or in the temple. See how many people think that's what it is? Now, I remember some time here, There's an interesting comment made here in Revelation 14. I think this is an important key here. Let's notice here in Revelation 14, it says here, it talks about the one who has the mark, but it says, if any man worship the beast or his image. So worshiping the beast and receiving his mark, the emphasis certainly is on worshiping the beast. Now what's that talking about? Is it talking about a political system? Well, there's a book out right now. I have it. I haven't read it yet. It's called The Church of Liberalism Godless. And it is an ideology that, according to the author, these people virtually worship. And it's certainly antagonistic to God in every way. So whether it's talking about that or whether it's talking about some system that's going to dominate the world's thinking, philosophically and even politically, that remains to be seen. But it certainly is people who worship it. They do obeyance to it and they serve it. So certainly it is a sign of allegiance to something other than God. Now, I had this call to my attention a number of years ago. Watch out for this www. When you click into the internet. You know, if you're looking up URL, you click in www. Dot, and then the name, see? And usually follow with a .com or .org, whatever it is you're following. Now that's the number 666, because the www in Hebrew or Greek means 666. That's what I was told a number of years ago. Of course, I didn't pay any attention to it. But here's something interesting. Why, the World Wide Web is not 666. That is www. 666 is the total numerical value of the letters of the Antichrist name. The World Wide Web is not a name. 666 is total of the numerical value of the letters of the Antichrist name. The actual total of www is 18, not 666. See, it's just like I was telling you about this post office box we had. If you just add the figures together, then you come up with 666. That's why we got rid of it. Was it necessary? Probably not. But I didn't want people figuring that out, and then all of a sudden we were the 666 church. See, so that's why we didn't accept it. But now, 666 is the number of a man, the Antichrist or the beast. The World Wide Web is not a man. The mark of the beast controls the ability to buy and sell. The World Wide Web currently does not. The mark of the beast goes into the right hand or on the forehead. The World Wide Web does not. See how people come up with these things? See, they're in a number. The mark is symbolic of the Antichrist or the beast. The World Wide Web is not. And the mark is received only after worshiping the beast. The World Wide Web is not worshipped. So that gives you a pretty good summary. Now let's go back here to Revelation 13, verse 16 once again. It says here, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their hand or on their foreheads, and that no man may buy or sell except one who has a mark of the name of the beast and the number of his name. Now here's an interesting comment from Kaufman's commentary. He says that organized false religions in many guises still exercise this merciless and unchristian device against nonconformists. Example in the following. An advertisement in Salt Lake City's leading newspaper carries an offer of an apartment to LDS only. A Catholic priest who was baptized in Italy could not find employment in the entire nation. And I don't know why that would have been the case there. And then the Amish cult in Pennsylvania consistently shuns those who disobey them or renounce their tenet of the cult. That has some biblical basis, all right, but it's a false religion to begin with. It doesn't carry much weight. Buying and selling is the world's biggest operation. The world is set up to game, define the rules, and manning the tables. Never forget it. The beast is the lord of this world. Whatever that's referring to. The economic system, is that a part of it? Social system, the military system? The educational system, all those tied in with it. You won't get very far at these tables then, John is saying, unless you can show proof that the boss has okayed you. And you'll never win unless you play according to the rules of the world. And here's a comment from Kaufman once again. No man is able to buy or sell. And the only thing indicated is that a victorious economic boycott will be launched against those who do not belong to the beast. The description here regards the method of his enforcing his will, and that method no doubt will vary according to the times and circumstances. an economic boycott says, do what we say or you'll starve you to death. And even the name of the beast and the number of his name and the consistent use of or here is interesting. And that is interesting. Let's notice it here in verse number 17. No one may buy or sell except one who has the mark. And then you see this or here, the name of the beast. That's not in the original. That's just been added. Why they don't italicize here, they presume it is. Now the or, the second one here, or the number of his name, that is in there. But the original one does not have that. And as it shows here in verse number 17, the mark, comma, the name. So whatever that means, I would presume the or is understood there. But there may be a, where the two are confluent. Now, it must be that no fully explanation has been encountered by this writer. Perhaps it indicates the diversity and variableness of the manner of the beast exercising his sanctions. The purpose of the mark, however, is clear enough. Distinguishing between the beast's followers and those who are not. And anything, therefore, that would indicate conspicuous loyalty would fill the bill of what is meant. So probably the passage is a figurative and unqualified expression for conspicuous loyalty. And here are some of the explanations offered for it. Seventh-day Adventist, the observance of it is a day of worship. It's a mark of the beast. And that's exactly what was taught by worldwide for many years. The mark of the beast is Sunday worship because it's something that's in your head by you observing it in your mind and then by refraining from your work on Sunday, then you have the mark of the beast on you. I wouldn't go so far as to say that is actually proven by now because it was an Adventist doctrine. Now the second one, Preston and Houston, these are a couple more authorities, suggest the mark of the beast was a parody of the practice of making the sign of the cross on the forehead of a new Christian. You know, let's see, my wallet, my belt, my watch, however they say it. You know, as they make that sign, that's supposed to be the mark of the beast. And then the making of the sign of the cross by crossing oneself was once thought to be the mark, and this accounts for the omission of the practice. And this is interesting. This is what counts for the omission of the practice in the Protestant Reformation. They once all did it. When they had the Reformation, they stopped doing it. And because the book of Revelation is filled with symbolism, the number is probably symbolic. And then it goes on to gives a number of things there. They don't really don't know. The number symbolizes the world dominion and complete evil of this unholy Trinity. So that gives you a pretty good idea of the thoughts that are on it. I had some more information here, but I won't have time to get to them now. So anyway, let me just summarize here at the start. I started by saying we're going to be witnessing these perils to watch for. Will some of us be alive when these things happen? Will all of us be? That remains to be seen. But I can tell you this, you better realize what Jesus said. You'd better be praying always that you're going to be worthy to escape all these things to come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. And if you're really sincere and you really mean business, you'll be praying, you'll be doing something about your beliefs. It won't be just a hollow belief. You won't be one who professes to be a spiritual Jew and are not. So we have false Christs, false prophets on the scene. We have the Antichrist coming on the scene. The synagogue of Satan is going to be around. The man of sin. Some fierce, enigmatic king. The king of the north. The beast and the false prophet. The mark of the beast and the number of his name. Those are the things we need to be aware of because these are the coming perils to watch for.